There we go. Are we all in there?
I'm here.
It's kind of quiet on my end. I guess I got to...
Mic check.
Turn my sound up.
Oh, I hear you.
You are joining We the People Radio here on a rainy afternoon, which is nice. Nice in Northern California to be able to say we're here on a rainy afternoon.
On a rainy, drought-stricken
exactly.
Afternoon, yeah.
Guess we're not going to die after all. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff.
And I'm Bob Martin.
Who we caught unaware. We are connecting our guests. We have one via Skype, and we have another one who's going to be on the phone. So while we're getting that all squared away, I thought I would, for those of you that are not online or did not get the email blast that we sent out ahead of time, I hope you'll sign up for that, though. If you go to wethepeopleradio.us, you will... access the website, and I don't send out a whole bunch of stuff. I just send out a promotion before any show that is something that I really know that you guys want to hear. And this came to me in an email from Lyle Rapacki, one of our guests. And it says, mentioned below are comments captured and spliced together from multiple postings on Facebook, and similar social media platforms. These are an example only of the type of communicated messages beginning to appear more frequently and brazenly across the United States. One intent for sharing this example only communication is to expose the mindset of terrorists now stepping up their focus on America. As a training vehicle, he's asking for, you know, people who are getting this, what are their thoughts? And he works a lot with law enforcement, and we'll get into that in a minute. But this is what the thing said. Good evening, Americans. I'm from the Islamic State, and I'm here to annihilate your children. While you have preoccupied yourself with messaging your Facebook friends from your student pickup area at your local religious school, I've been surveilling my target. The first thing I noticed when arriving at your children's school were the gun-free zone signs posted around the perimeter, advising that there is no one inside that has the ability to stop me. When I decide to gun down your children, I know I'll go unchallenged until the arrival of law enforcement. I'm aware of their response times because I've made false reports over the course of the last several months and timed their response. I also read in your local paper that they are understaffed by hundreds of officers. This morning, I pulled into a parking space with a good view of the cluster of gathered children and observed their movements throughout the entry point of the school. I've noted the time the gates open and the time the largest gathering of students occurs. I noticed most of you... we're paying attention to your cell phones. The one person who with a concerned face that actually did notice what I was doing quickly looked away when we made eye contact. The best part is they will not report the encounter for fear of being labeled a racist, xenophobic, or paranoid. Nothing confirmed it more than the coexist bumper sticker plastered across the back of their car. My brothers and I are going to ensure that your schools make headlines worldwide. The pictures of little Jewish kids wearing yarmulkes and little Christian children with crosses around their necks will all be plastered across the front page of every news outlet in the world. Our attacks will be talked about endlessly by terrorism experts, used as training examples in public safety courses, and splashed across every form of social media for years. I may even get the honor of making the cover of Rolling Stone magazine, like Dokar Tsarnaev. We will fill every city across the nation with memorials to the dead. We'll ensure every day is the anniversary of a terror attack. The day following the attacks, masses of parents will withdraw their children from religious schools across the nation. The religious education for a generation of children will be over. Politicians will hold press conferences expressing public outrage while pocketing money taken from our Saudi supporters. Your women will change their Facebook avatars to an American flag overlay, and your men will post a meme of a Spartan warrior as they flop down on the couch, crack open a beer, and watch your national anthem song while the players kneel in protest of your country. The people you have entrusted your safety to have been handcuffed. Our brothers operating non-governmental organizations have ensured that you can't even mention our ideology in intelligence reports, and instead refer to our ideology in nebulous terms like violent extremists or homegrown violent extremists. The people guarding your borders have been stood down by their superiors. We now actually seek agents out so we can claim amnesty and penetrate your defenses. Lastly, while my family is being honored in my home country for this great jihad, your politicians will be introducing legislation to disarm any future Americans that could potentially rise up to stop us. You are weak. You are defenseless, and you can't stop us.
That's frightening.
I've only read that to myself, like, quietly, and somehow reading it out loud was a million times creepier. Okay, so status check. Who do we have on with us? Do we have everyone?
I believe we do.
Oh, my gosh. Well, all right, so while I was doing, you know, War of the Worlds there, we were adding Dr. Lyle Rapacki to our show here. He's the one who sent me the email, actually. He's the author, and he's got some interesting information about the beginning of that email, for sure. He's a private sector intelligence, behavior analysis, and threat assessment specialist, and I get all of his reports under Sentinel. What is it? Sentinel, help me, Lyle.
Intelligence services.
Sentinel intelligence services. I knew it was Sentinel something, and it had intelligence in it.
Well, I'm just lucky I got through. I'm having technical problems.
I was really trying hard not to pay attention to you guys. It's like, all right, I'm just going to keep reading this scary email. And then we also have Claire Lopez with us. She's the Vice President for Research and Analysis at the Center for Security Policy. She's got a giganto resume. They both do. And I have posted both of those online for you. I figured I'd let you guys add what was pertinent to your resume for this discussion. Because, I mean, we don't want people to think that we're having a what-if conversation with folks who don't know. I mean, you guys are qualified to say that that's all absolutely waiting for us down the line.
Well, I'll defer to Claire because she outranks me. She's and she always gets upset with me when I say something like that.
Claire.
She's on the A-list, and I just kind of carry her luggage at times.
That's awesome. Start with the rabbit punch, Claire. Go for it.
Okay. Well, I will apologize in advance because I am today in South Dakota, in Rapid City, South Dakota, where I spoke to some legislators yesterday. Local state legislators, and also a wonderful group of citizens last night. But today, we are driving up into the Black Hills to go see Mount Rushmore.
And nice.
So I am not completely sure how long the connection will hold, but until it does, or as long as it does, I'll just say that, you know, what Lyle spelled out there in that piece that you just read is you know, in large part what a lot of Americans are concerned about, and realistic as to what we're facing. We are at war. Probably most of our national security leadership prefers not to see that, pretends that it's not happening, calls it anything else but what it is, which is war against the enemy, is the forces of Islamic Jihad, or the Global Islamic Movement, as the Muslim Brotherhood calls it. And the pace is indeed picking up, both here and, as we've seen, certainly in Western Europe, too. So the concerns are real, and the need for our local law enforcement in particular to be informed and to step up to the plate, to be the first line of defense, or maybe it's the last line of defense, is critical. So that's where we are.
How much feedback are you getting from local sheriffs and police agencies in the country? I mean, are they? I'm sure they're aware that there's a risk here, but are they fully on board with the magnitude of this whole thing?
Well, it's a real mixed bag, I have to tell you. In addition to my work at the Center for Security Policy, which is a think tank in Washington, D.C., I also partner with John Guandolo at Understanding the Threat. That's online at understandingthethreat.com. And we provide training courses, particularly to law enforcement across the country, but also speak to citizens groups. And like the center also, try to reach out now more and more to local faith community leaders, because these are the key people that will be necessary, local citizens, faith leaders, and local law enforcement, to confront what is really an insurgency within our midst. And the mixed bag part of that is that in some places, like Arizona, where Lyle has helped us tremendously with contacts and introductions, we've had a great welcome and a very receptive audience from law enforcement and the private citizens. And that is true in other places around the country, but there are still more where it's not the case at all, and where the Muslim Brotherhood has made such inroads with the local law enforcement leadership or municipal leadership that, for instance, city council or mayor appoints the police chief, let's say, they really are, willfully blind. I mean, that's the only way to put it. Prefer to keep their heads down in the sand.
So are you saying that members of the Muslim Brotherhood are involved with local law enforcement? And,
oh, definitely, and yes. Extensively so, across
really?
The country.
On what yes. levels?
At the sheriff level, deputy sheriff level, mayor and governor level, United States congressional level.
Wow.
And also police chief, city council level, all of the above.
So are they, I'm sure it's probably a little bit of both, but maybe you can give us an idea of the magnitude, influencing policy from the outside or participating as players on the inside?
Well, what the heck? These leadership figures just
moved. I think she was just captured by Mount Rushmore.
Uh-oh. Let me, if I could jump
yeah.
in.
Fire away, Lyle, till...
While Claire gets a second breath there.
It doesn't take that long to look at Mount Rushmore. I've done it a couple times.
a little over a year ago, I held a private briefing here in Arizona. I asked Claire, John Gondola, who we work with, and Frank Gaffney, who is an undersecretary of defense in the Reagan administration, who established the Center for Security Policy, which Claire is one of the vice presidents of. I asked them to come to Arizona, and in a secure setting, I arranged for a one-day briefing. In this briefing, I had personally invited legislators from five Western states, also invited counterterrorism officials, key law enforcement officials that showed up from three states, and then also some selected elected and citizen, what I'm going to call citizen, public citizens, people who have large constituencies, maybe executive directors of an organization, for instance. Altogether, there were 90 people in a secure setting. In this setting, Claire, John Gondola, Frank Gaffney, myself, but I was mostly the MC, presented to these folks gathered really clear intelligence, not opinions, not philosophies, not theories, but hardcore, actionable, what's called actionable intelligence, from which legislation could pursue and from which law enforcement could then begin to step up and be a little bit more assertive in their areas of responsibility and authority. I said to the gathered audience that by the end of the day, it was my impression that they would leave this briefing very different. They would leave actually a little bit more quiet, a little bit more subdued. Now, mind you, we had legislators from five states, senators, representatives, senior law enforcement people, and counterterrorism. All of these folks are used to sitting through briefings and meetings. It's just a lifestyle. For them to leave at the end of the day, which was around 4:30, and to walk out somewhat subdued was really different. They're not used to that. They're used to taking information in and still having a fairly nice day and being able to kind of joke on the way out. That's not my impression as they left that day. They were a little bit more subdued. I attribute that to John and Claire and, of course, Frank, who gave very actionable, hard-hitting, no-nonsense intelligence as to, based on your question, Aaron, or maybe it was Bob who asked, how far-reaching have we been compromised? And as Claire was saying so eloquently, at all levels, all 16 intelligence agencies in the United States have been compromised. Our entire executive branch of the United States has been compromised. Congress has been compromised all the way down. We do know that local law enforcement also is under the influence of Muslim Brotherhood, because they'll establish something like the Muslim Brotherhood Law Enforcement Advisory Committee. Sounds kind of innocuous, but what they end up doing is enforcing their jihad into the local establishment, both through mayors, city councilmen, and law enforcement. And what they're hoping to accomplish is what they've done in Europe, and you can see it unfolded in Europe, where they have no-go zones, where law enforcement, even fire, don't go, because they've taken over an entire neighborhood and they've turned it into a Muslim hold. So kind of in a, well Claire maybe is back on now, that's what is happening all across this country.
Before
hold that thought. We've got to take a really quick break here. Sorry, just in time for Claire to get back. Did you see Rushmore when you drove by, Claire?
We're not quite there yet. We're still climbing the hill. So. I'll do my best here.
Just kidding. All righty. We'll take a really quick break. Join us online if you have time. If you're in today in the rain, wethepeopleradio.us. And we have a chat room running while we're live here. So any questions you have, you can fire us to us through there. Be right back.
Give me land, lots of land under starry skies above. Don't fence me in. Let me ride through the wide open country that I love. Don't fence me in.
I like
this is for Claire.
Let me be by myself.
I like walls.
This is Claire's driving song.
Listen to the murmur of the cottonwood trees. Send me off forever, but I ask you, please, don't fence me in.
Exactly.
Just
unless
fence them out.
Unless you're a terrorist, in which case, yeah. Oh, my gosh. Okay, so enough goofing off. We're back. I don't know which one of you wants to tackle that. We were just discussing
Could I finish something before we – because Claire's she always has great insights. The reason, and this follows up on what Claire was alluding to, the reason we had so many different folks there, legislators, community leaders, counterterrorism, all that, we put them together deliberately because Claire is absolutely right. They have infiltrated almost every aspect, and law enforcement is struggling to figure out what they can do that would be politically acceptable. Normally, in the past, you don't have that sort of a problem, but this is such a political football because it's been made a political football by the current administration and even others on both sides of the aisles, that now it's filtered on down to the local level where people are afraid to move because they're afraid that they're going to be accused of some sort of phobia.
Sure.
And this now comes out to the law enforcement people out on the street where they're afraid to actually function because they're going to get called or lose their jobs or even worse, get sued in some way. So it's become a paralyzing factor in our United States at all levels. And Claire's right, what we've worked on, John Gondolo, Claire, myself, Frank, and others, is trying to get a community awareness level, a synergy, if you will, with pastors and community leaders supporting mayors and city councilmen so they believe they have the support that's necessary. And then city councilmen and mayors supporting the police chiefs and the police, which they need to have so they can move on. And then likewise, state legislators supporting city councilmen, et cetera, et cetera. So it's all tied in there together. It's a really a complex little web, but we have to do this to get the synergy to offset what Muslim Brotherhood has done, which is very sophisticated, by the way.
Well, they've done an exceptionally good job in understanding how our system works
and shutting us all up.
Oh yeah, and where they can have the biggest impact on affecting policy, law enforcement, and so forth. So you got to hand it to them there. While we've sat and watched it all, well, we didn't watch it all happen. I think in a lot of cases they didn't know it was happening. But here we are. So what do we do with that, Lyle?
Or Claire?
Well, I think it's at two levels. I mean, and I'd like Claire to jump in on this because she's seeing the same thing at the congressional level where she briefs leading congressional and senatorial people. We're having the same problem there. Not to steal the thunder from her, but she can speak to this, but we're having the same problem at the federal level we are at the local level and vice versa. In fact, that's one of the things that brought Claire and me together, I think 6 years ago, Claire, I think it was, where at the local level, I was reading what she was doing at the federal level, and I was saying, we're having the problems down here already, and if it filters down from the federal level, it won't be very long before we're going to have mass political paralysis. Well, here we are about 6 years later, 7 years later, when I became first aware of it, and that's what we have. So it's critical that first of all, very valid training goes out. Not opinions, not theories, philosophies, and all that crap that you see a lot of times on the internet.
Right.
But very valid training, very solid training. And it needs to get out to the right key decision makers, which would be pastors, city leaders, community leaders. It could be the head of the some community group, let's say. And that's what I did is I brought in selective community leaders as well as elected officials and law enforcement officials. They have to come together to support one another. And then Claire, I think, really can give us some insight from the federal level because she's dealing with that at the congressional level.
Well, yeah, I mean, Lyle's exactly right. But we understand that in an insurgency, and that is what we're facing an insurgency within the borders of the United States. The answer is to be found at the local level. The answer is not going to come from Capitol Hill. Yes, we work with congressional leaders. We'll brief whomever would like to have us brief them. But the answer is really going to come from the local level because that's the level at which an insurgency is fought. And again, back to those key pillars of society, as I think of them, the local citizens, the faith leaders, and the local law enforcement. Now, as we've said, Lyle and I both have said that in too many places already, the Muslim Brotherhood Network has already reached and compromised with information operations. That's what we're talking about, information operations, compromised some of these local people. Faith leaders were targeted a long time ago with the Interfaith Dialogue Movement to co-opt ministers, priests, rabbis, so that they come to value their friendship with their newfound, you know, Muslim Brotherhood BFS over, you know, the fate of their own co-religionists being slaughtered over in the Middle East and other places. And they don't talk about that. And they don't talk about what the actual agenda of the Islamic movement is, which the Brotherhood lays out so clearly in its own publicized documents. And many of these, of course, made known to us through the 2008 Holy Land Foundation trial. But that objective, absolutely identical with the objectives of Al-Qaeda, Boko Haram, Islamic State, Hamas, Hezbollah, Taliban, you name it. Doesn't matter if the group is violent jihadi or suit-wearing jihadi, their objectives are the same. Destruction of Western civilization, destruction of the United States from within. And so they have already co-opted and reached too many of our local leadership in these key areas. And what we're doing now, trying to do to fight back against this insurgency, is to reach out selectively to those who welcome us, to those who, you know, have open open ears for the message and to try to bring together a coalition of those local leadership figures to form an effective strategic operational and tactical at all three levels counter jihad force.
Aren't you finding, Claire, that local law enforcement and community leaders and local politicians are struggling with this by not having the support of on the federal side? Because I think the federal side, without them more or less giving them a green light, are kind of tying their hands. They're afraid to do anything.
Well, they're also dishing out a whole bunch of refugees to them.
Yeah.
It is all of the above, yeah. No, you're absolutely right. But in the final analysis, the local level does have the power to fight back. What they might be seeing is certainly support from the federal level, but they're not expecting that anymore anyway.
They've
given up on that. The threat, of course, is when, you know, the federal level, like Department of Justice, comes down legally against, let's say, a sheriff like Sheriff Joe Arpaio, Maricopa County in Arizona.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. Yeah.
When they come after him. Now, more often than not, it is just a complete difference of approach and of operations between federal level and local level. Federal level aggressive, pursuit of the local sheriff or whomever it may be, is less the case, and more the case that they're simply not helpful. There's no good communication. There's no good exchange of information or sharing of the kind of information that would be helpful to the local level. And that's where we come in to fill in with that information and fill in some of those gaps for them.
What are you finding at the congressional level? Are they receptive to the message, or does everybody just kind of want to stay out of it because it's a giant
football? Most congressional members have a huge range of issues on which they need to be current. Transportation, education, health care, you name it. And, by the way, national security, too. And so it's difficult for them, and they often rely heavily on staff. Many times that staff, the staff themselves are really good, hardworking, patriotic young folks, but without a lot of world experience in these kinds of issues, at least. And so with some exceptions, it's tough to reach most congressional members, be they senators or congressmen, but there are several outstanding exceptions to that. I'll name, of course, Louie Gohmert out of Texas and Trent Franks out of Arizona and Scott Perry out of Pennsylvania. I mean, these are just standouts for us, and I don't mean to be missing a whole bunch of others, but there are fewer of them than those who have their attention elsewhere.
Sure. And
I think that's one of the struggles. Claire, correct me. You and I have talked about this as we've put some of these together, but that's actually been one of our struggles. Claire's, myself, John, Frank, all these same people, and others, Bridget, Gabrielle, and others, is finding elected officials, regardless of level, federal, state, local, regardless. Same thing with law enforcement, regardless, federal, state, whatever. Finding those individuals who are already not compromised or are willing to take the steps to learn some things. They're so overwhelmed by just the normal ebb and flow of their jobs that now you bring in something that they have to learn from the grassroots up. And sometimes that's easier said than done because it overwhelms them. And I'm not making fun of them.
We have the same problem
with all legislators. I started out 7 years ago advising selected members of the Arizona legislature on border security. And one of the things that was just very quickly clear to me was that you had to be extremely concise, and you had to give them, and no pun intended here, you had to give it to them in a seventh grade level, not because they're not smart. Don't do that. They are. But they're so overwhelmed with the minutia of so many of a myriad of issues that to get their attention and then to hold it, you had to give whatever you're presenting to them in an extremely palatable format. Well, when you're talking about this issue of actual infiltration, it's not that easy to whittle it down. Now, Claire's better at it than I am, and I'm not being funny. She really is. But going back to what she was also saying, General Boykin, Jerry Boykin, Lieutenant General, retired Boykin, who started Delta Force and all that, he talked about just this last weekend the explanatory memorandum that Claire was alluding to. And this is an explanatory memorandum, that's what it's titled, that the Muslim Brotherhood has laid out in great detail. They have an actual document that talks about how they will systematically, orchestrationally, I think I just coined a word, orchestrationally.
You're true.
We were gonna
roll with that. If Bill said it,
myself.
If Bill said it, I was gonna jump in, but it was you, so I was gonna give you a pass.
I just heard myself, and I went, "Wow, wait a minute! I don't think that's a word. I think I just
like Mike Tyson."
William Buckley would be proud of me. Anyway, it's so well orchestrated that it talks about how Muslim Brotherhood, through its various branches, will go ahead and spread Sharia into every segment of America, including the church. And that's what we've been talking about here, is getting the different areas brought together so they're no longer stovepipe, they're no longer not cross-talking. And this is one of the other problems in law enforcement, is that there hasn't been a lot of reaching over the aisle. There was some for a good couple of years after 9/11. But unfortunately, from my perspective, this is just my opinion, law enforcement, the various intelligence agencies have gone back to not sharing, not really cooperating on the exchange of intelligence. And the Muslim Brotherhood, CARE, Hamas, I mean, you just go down the whole list, they're counting on that. They are counting on people not coming together, city councilmen talking to police chiefs and city councilmen not talking to a legislator. And in our briefing, we did it again in Texas, Claire will remember, a couple of months later, I purposely wanted to have law enforcement people sitting next to legislators. That's, you know, they don't do that. They're a little gun shy of doing that. Law enforcement is very cautious about being singled out and saying that they're trying to be political or they're trying to do one-upsmanship or move up the ladder. There's all this ridiculousness, but I purposely at the luncheon had counterterrorism people sitting next to legislators, sitting next to a couple of pastors, sitting next to some civilian leaders on by design. We did that because I needed them to start talking to one another. It's a
great
idea.
It's
a rather uphill battle. Yes, sir.
See, it's interesting because we have a, they call it North State Sheriffs, but it's really North State Law Enforcement, meets probably quarterly. I think at the worst case scenario is like three times a year, but usually it's quarterly. And it's everyone in law enforcement, you know, or a representative from their agency north of Sacramento, so the top half of the state. So you have, you know, FBI, you have the crime lab, you have DEA, you have local police chiefs, all the sheriffs from all the counties. And they do have representatives from the state, the assembly, the congressional office, not usually the federal Senate. We haven't seen them in, geez, I don't know. Have we ever seen them up this far?
Do we have a Senate?
Yeah. Feinstein and Boxer are not big Northern California travelers. I'm not sure they actually know the freeway goes this far.
We paid them to move to D.C.
Yeah, we keep them as far away as possible. But, no, they did do these meetings, and they're very, very helpful. I know that they share a lot of information with each other, so that's actually, I can report to those listening in Northern California, at least our law enforcement and legislators all do communicate together. We have to take one more really quick break here, and then we're going to come back. Claire, are you getting closer?
We are.
Can you see the guys?
We certainly are. We'll see.
All right, we want a full report to make sure Obama hasn't gotten himself on there yet.
I heard they were chiseling out a spot.
I'll let you know.
Okay. We'll be right back. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. For us, beauty lies in people that are smart. The rest is all subjective. All right. Bill has a question for you.
I've got a question. You know, we talked about the basic infiltration of America by hostile folks. Do you have any numbers on the amount or the numbers of people coming across or coming into the country who, you know, legally and illegally, who pose a threat to our local communities?
You know, what I would say is that the original members of the Muslim Brotherhood who founded the original organizations, the front groups here in the United States, they came into the country one way or another legally and established themselves here. Now, the threat is not so much that infiltration coming in across borders illegally or slipping somehow through ports of entry illegally. It is rather the communities of Sharia-adherent Muslims already living among us, among whom are some number, don't know what number, percentage, whatever that may be, of Muslims who are already here legally, citizens, living among us, who hear and answer the call to the highest level of devotion of Islam, and that is jihad.
Okay.
That's what we were afraid of. Thanks for clearing that up. So talk about some of this this refugee business. You know, I think we all figure that they're using the refugee thing to, you know, sneak into the country and set up. But, of course, there's a, you know, huge push against that. Oh, of course not. They're just running away from war and blah, blah, blah. But what do you say?
Right. Well, the Federal Refugee Resettlement Program, and I'll speak to that specifically rather than the full range of other kinds of immigration, of which there are several. But in terms of refugee resettlement, first of all, let me point you and your listeners in the direction of Anne Corcoran and her very excellent website, the blog she keeps at Refugee Resettlement Watch. You'll find daily information posted there about the full spectrum of refugee resettlement in this country. But the way it is run, it depends on the United Nations, whose High Commission on Refugees has the responsibility in the world for setting up refugee camps, screening and interviewing refugees, and deciding which among them will be selected for resettlement onward elsewhere. And then the UNHCR discusses with the U.S. State Department how many each year the U.S. will take in. Now, we know that the Obama administration has said they would like to take 110,000 in this new fiscal year. We've just begun on the 1st of October. And so at that point, the Department of State actually contracts by the head with a number of key contractors. Many of these are faith-based groups like Methodist and Lutheran Social Services and Hebrew Aid Society, or Catholic Charities, which actually run more like a business than a charity or a religious organization, on a contractual by-the-head basis to resettle refugees. And then they set up an office or rely on an office already set up in some local jurisdiction around the country and simply bring the refugees in. And unfortunately, the way that federal law is written right now, the local state governments, legislatures, never mind the county, government or city or township level, have no real say-so. The federal law says something to the effect of, you ought to consult with them. It would be a good thing to consult with them or some such. But it's not mandatory. So let me make a plug. In my role as a private citizen here, not as a vice president of a 501c3, which the center is, but as Claire Lopez, private citizen, I would encourage your listeners to take a look at a new bill that Representative Scott Perry out of Pennsylvania in the Gettysburg area proposed just a couple months ago. And that bill would make it mandatory that the states, the governors, and the local people would have a say-so in the refugee resettlement process. How many refugees, from where, at what pace do they come in? How well can they be absorbed? Are there sufficient services? All these things. And most importantly, perhaps, according to this bill, if it's passed, they would have veto power over any of the above, the numbers, the pace, the origins, the screening process. So that is something that I think if people got behind that.
Do we have a bill number by any chance?
No, there's no bill number yet assigned that I know of. But if you go to Scott Perry's own website,
okay,
that bill will be there, and its wording, and you can take a look at it. It's not terribly long, but it's quite specific that states and local people, governments, will have a say-so in the refugee resettlement process. And I think that is so critical for managing this going forward.
So you're saying that under the federal resettlement program currently in effect, states have no say as to whether or not they can or cannot accept refugees that are being planted in their cities. That's really nice.
That is correct.
What would you say is a bigger threat right now? The resettlement of refugees or the infiltration of folks like the Brotherhood settling in our local governments and police forces and so forth?
Well, I think the most critical threat to be addressed immediately by an incoming new presidential administration should be to address the jihadist Muslim Brotherhood infiltration of our national security. I think that would set the stage for everything else after it.
Yeah, because they're in positions of power that can really influence what we're able to do to fight this threat.
Yeah, and they do. And as I've said, the way it is now, our National Security Council, our White House, our State Department, our Department of Homeland Security, preferentially and even exclusively deal only with Muslim Brotherhood front groups, especially Hamas. Hamas in America, of course, doing business as CAIR, that is CAIR, Council on American Islamic Relations, which is Hamas in America. Preferentially doing business with them, relying on them for advice, relying on them for training. That would all stop were a new administration to take a good, solid look at what information operations mean, what the Brotherhood is doing. And again, the Brotherhood is not acting in a terrorist capacity inside the United States at all.
Yet.
They're not terrorists at all. Yeah. They're subversives, and that's way more dangerous.
So, and isn't Hamas, haven't they proven that they're being funded by the mullahs in Iran?
Well, in Gaza, certainly, the Tehran regime assists the Gaza regime of Hamas. Hamas, of course, in Gaza is the Palestinian branch of the Muslim Brotherhood. The relationship with Tehran has been off again, on again. Of course, there was a big rift at the time that the uprising began against Bashar al-Assad in the former Syria, where Hamas up until that point had its offices located, its headquarters in Damascus.
Lovely.
And of course, that caused a rift, and so it goes back and forth. But over time, the important thing to remember is that all jihadis fight for the very same cause:
yes.
A global Islamic government under Sharia. And it doesn't matter if they're Shiite jihadis or Sunni jihadis; they all want that same thing.
All right, we're going to take a break.
Same end.
We're going to pick up on this when we get back from the break.
Absolutely. The news is going to cut us off here for 5 minutes. We'll be back with Lyle Rapacki and potentially Claire Lopez talking about what's going on with the Islamists in the U.S. and what you should be concerned about and watching for.